Basic Brewing Radio is brought to you by the American Homebrewers Association, a network of more than 40,000 people dedicated to the appreciation of beer, cider, and mead. Join at homebrewersassociation.org for recipes, brewery discounts, and other great resources. homebrewersassociation.org. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, July 29th. 2021. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Steve Wilkes and I visit the tap room of Core Brewing in Springdale, Arkansas, to talk to Rodrigo Medina and Jamie Conway about their barrel projects, hard seltzers, and ready-to-drink cocktails. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows. And if you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs and our brewer's logbooks. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing and find our show page on Facebook as well. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. And thanks to everybody who's helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. And I just realized as I'd read the date at the top of the show that this month marks our 16th birthday as a podcast. Going into our 17th year now, and it's thanks to you guys. Thanks to the financial supporters. Thanks to our sponsors. Thanks to everybody who's contributed over the years. And thanks to you for listening, just keeping it up. It's crazy. my mind is blown. I thought it'd last 10 shows. I've said it several times, but I thought we would run out of stuff to talk about after 10 shows. It's now 758. This is show number 758 for those keeping track at home. Financial supporters have already seen the video episode that I'm planning to release to the public on Friday about Steve's beer that I'm calling Rip Van Triple. It's a beer that Steve sort of forgot about while he was having health problems and left it for around a year in a chilled secondary fermenter. Spoiler, it turned out very nicely. Thank goodness Steve is feeling a whole lot better these days and has been brewing up a storm the past couple of weeks. I told him a couple of days ago he needs to throw a fish fry or something and, you know, just to get rid of that excess homebrew. And I'd be more than happy to help in getting rid of the homebrew. You know, I don't know about frying the fish. It's hot outside. Financial supporters also got a bonus video on fermented hot sauce. This batch of hot sauce that I show you how I make in the video, I blended together jalapenos and serranos along with some very sweet peppers to try to get some interesting complexity in the sauce. And the resulting hot sauce is not very pretty. To tell you the truth, it kind of took me back to when the boys were in diapers, but it really it really is tasty on breakfast tacos. And you can find that video on our Patreon feed still. Speaking of peppers, the first couple of habaneros in our little garden are finally about ready to be picked, and they are huge. I've got two plants this year. One is store-bought, and the other I actually grew from a seed from last year's plant. That's the first time I've tried that. I'm really interested to see what characteristics come out of that plant to see if it mirrors what last year's peppers look like or not. If you follow me on Instagram, at Basic Brewing, you probably saw the videos that I posted of my very active airlock a few days ago. That was on my New England IPA that I brewed with the inspiration from Matt Giovannisi's quote-unquote perfect NIPA from a few episodes ago. I followed his grain bill very closely. I deviated just a little bit, and it was funny because I guess I wasn't paying much attention when I used his recipe to place my order at stevesbrewshop.com. When I added it all up, and the total grain bill was 16 pounds or 7.25 kilos for a 5-gallon or 19-liter batch, I was kind of surprised. I didn't think it was going to be that big. I guess I'd forgotten in the conversation that Matt and I had, and I didn't look at the specs very closely. So to accomplish that big old beer, I started with a couple extra gallons in my brew-in-a-bag kettle, and I wound up with a wort of the proper volume with an original gravity of 1070, which is a little off from the 1075 specified in the recipe. So I was pretty happy with that. I decided not to dry hop this beer because I was afraid of oxidation. And so I just went ahead and I added what I had into a reduced temperature hop stand after the end of the boil. So I added an ounce or 28 grams of Holler Tower Mittelfruer at the beginning of the 90-minute boil, and then did a two-step whirlpool addition starting at 170 degrees Fahrenheit, or 76.7 C. At that point, I added 2 ounces, or 56 grams each, of Nelson, Sauvin, and Galaxy. And then, 10 minutes later, I added that same amount again, 2 ounces, or 56 grams, of Nelson, Sauvin, and Galaxy. And I let the temperature fall naturally during that time. And then 10 minutes after that, so for that, you know, that makes a total of 20-minute hop stand, I went ahead and chilled the wort to 98 degrees Fahrenheit, or 37 C. And then I pitched a pouch of A46 Bartleby, which is the Kveik strain, for my friends and sponsors at Imperial Organic Yeast. Now, this is where the story gets fun. I set the bucket fermenter on my porch, which was around 95 degrees Fahrenheit at that time in the day, around 2 o'clock in the afternoon, or 35 C. A couple hours later, I checked, and the airlock was already moving at the speed that you'd expect, you know, a happy fermentation at peak activity. I posted a video of that on Instagram. Then, at 11 o'clock that evening, 8 hours after I pitched, that airlock was kicking out gas, CO2, maybe faster than I've ever seen before. I mean, the thing, it hardly blooped because it was just like a steady stream of air coming out. You can take a look at the video. It's pretty much just a steady stream of gas just being forced out of that airlock. And there was no need for a blow-off tube, surprisingly. Luckily, there was enough headspace in the bucket that the airlock stayed clean. Incredible. I let the bucket sit out on the porch for the next day and the next night, and brought it inside the next day when the activity looked like it had pretty much come to a close. And so I let it sit inside to settle down a little bit. And on day 5, yesterday, I kegged it. So I took a quick sip off the tap a few minutes ago, just for research, you know. And it's very much like having a mimosa at this point. Super juicy and deceptively drinkable. It went from 1070 down to 1010, which is lower than the anticipated. That's lower than what Matt got. Matt got 1020 is the final gravity. So I guess the A46 Bartleby from Imperial was a little hungry than the juice. A little hungrier than the juice yeast that Matt used. So I'm blown away, and I can't wait for Steve to try it. Imperial Organic Yeast A46 Bartleby is the summer seasonal from Imperial. So get it now and take some advantage of the hot temperatures to brew some amazingly delicious beers. That's A46 Bartleby from Imperial Organic Yeast. Ask your local homebrew store about Imperial A46 Bartleby and visit Imperial at imperialyeast.com. That's imperialyeast.com. Okay, it's been a couple of years, it turns out, since I've been up to Core Brewing, and then there's been a lot going on. Thanks to COVID, they've had to pivot their business to keep healthy, to keep the business healthy during that time. And part of that has been to develop a very successful line of what I'm calling craft hard seltzers. And they're using some of the income from that hard seltzer to brew some really delicious side projects, like delicious barrel-aged beers, which we get to sample, along with some fun, ready-to-drink cocktails. Well, I'm here in the tap room, the tasting room of Core Brewing in Springdale, Arkansas, and with me is my trusty companion, Steve Wilkes.
Hey, James.
And here we are with Jamie Conway.
Hi, James.
And Rodrigo Medina.
Howdy.
And it's been probably a couple years.
I think about two.
Since
since I've been here, and so I decided to bring along Steve. Some things have been happening in the meantime. Y'all have launched this line of hard seltzers, which I wanted to talk in detail with you about, but you said, oh, we're a little tight-lipped about the whole old seltzer thing. But we'll talk about it a bit. Then you've also got these hard, or they're canned cocktails. And then the sweet thing that got the fly up here in the for the flypaper was a couple of barrel age projects that y'all have been doing. So you've really kind of diversified since I was here last. You guys have been busy.
Yeah, absolutely. Scarlet Letter's obviously been huge for our entire company, and it's kind of with the release of the RTDs, it's allowed Rodrigo and I to kind of focus on things like barrel age, the barrel age program, and just the beers that, you know, we both enjoy making, hazy IPAs, sours, you know, things. Roddy loves making lagers, so just the things that we want to focus on. These are kind of the things that let us do that.
So, how big is hard seltzer now in your life, Roddy?
So, as much as I wanted to dislike it, you know, it's definitely, I've gone to grow and like actually try some. I've started drinking a lot of them actually recently because there's so many of them to try. But yeah, like Jamie was saying, it's something that we had to like kind of just like accept and use these as, you know, essentially like the bloodline for the brewery that will allow us to focus on smaller batch beers and, you know, more cash equals more toys to play with and more barrels. So that's where we're at now. So I think we're at a good spot with seltzer and beer.
So it's floating the boat right now.
Yep. Yeah. It's huge. Yeah. It's, this is my first year doing taxes and brewery reports for the brewery. And it's definitely shocking to see how much more seltzer we produce versus beer. Like this month, I think, or in June, sorry, I think we just did, you know, two batches of beer, which is our hazy IPA, our regular IPA, Los Santos. And seltzer is just what's keeping the train rolling right now.
Well, cheers to that, because I had a commercial. My only other commercial example of hard seltzer was White Claw Mango, and that was a long time ago when I was making my own. And I said, if that's what hard seltzer is, I don't want anything about it, because it kind of tastes that it had that artificial kind of I like to say urinal cake kind of. kind of character. I've never tasted a urinal cake, but from the ones that I've smelled, it's that kind of artificial. Just to me, it's nasty. And I know you guys don't want to talk badly about your competitors, so I will. But but I guess, you know, Red Bull to me kind of has that same kind of thing as well, and that may just be where the palate is going nowadays. But I got a mixed pack at Whole Foods, and I tasted the first one, and it just made me want to drink another one, just because the flavors, there's a blend of flavors that goes in each, and they're kind of more mature flavors than just like fruit punch and strawberry, you know, so, and there's no like lingering, horrible aftertaste that's going on in the background. So I know that you can't say much, but, you know, what's the approach for flavoring these hard seltzers?
Like I was telling you earlier, we work with a local mixologist that kind of helps us. You know, he has an idea, and then we kind of make pilot batches of it and sample some of those flavors and kind of see what needs to be tweaked, and we go from there. But yeah, everything was very intentional. Like I was telling you, every flavor has a minimum of four flavors. So we don't want to be in that just one thing, like you were saying, mango or pineapple. I mean, everything's, you know, just very intentional and thought through, and like, you know, like our green one's got bergamot in it. Who knows what a bergamot is, you know? I mean, it's like things like that that you just wouldn't expect in a seltzer. And what's really interesting is like you bought our variety pack, and like the people that we talk to, how everyone has a single flavor that they like more. You know, my wife loves the red, my mom likes the purple, you know, everybody has their own favorite one, and it doesn't seem to be like that one really outshines the rest. So I think that's a testament to, you know, just the quality of the whole package.
And is this, and again, not getting into the proprietary stuff, but is this something that a home brewer could achieve? Is this fairly easily achievable?
Yeah, I think so now, especially because there has been, I remember the first batches of Scarlet Letter that we were making here, you know, we're still trying to figure out how to ferment this one sugar and ferment it fully to where you aren't getting that white grape flavor that you usually get from just, you know, fermenting one simple sugar. So after a bunch of trial and error, we finally, I think, got a consistent product. But yeah, my thing is I would just stick to, you know, filtration. And now there's a bunch of yeast. Like, I know Omega Yeast Labs, they're working on a bunch of strains that will be able to ferment higher. So you can get away from that wine grape flavor by, like, trying different yeast. And that's what I would suggest. I think it's very feasible. And now, you know, with podcasts and people that, like, that are, you know, focusing on seltzer, there's so much more data and things that can help people out. And I think, you know, if you just read up on those, you should be pretty good to make some. I would just filter. Yeah.
Our friend Chris Colby wrote a book about how to make hard seltzer.
Yeah.
And also our sponsor, Imperial Organic Yeast, also has some some seltzer-driven... We have to drop those in there.
Nice segue.
My nose is brown right now. So, but on the flavoring side, are there any tips or tricks that you can give us on the homebrew side about how to achieve the best... I mean, these are very kind of natural tasting flavors. And again, there's not that lingering aftertaste of, you know, artificialness that's in other, you know, similar drinks.
So I would say, you know, we really, and like even with our beer, like all the stuff that we use, whether it be like extract, I would just try to find a supplier that uses actually like pressed fruit juice and try to get as close to that as you can. Otherwise, you're not going to have a clean flavor. Like, you know, we've gone through different extract players, and I think the one that we have now has been really good for us. They make stuff from pressed fruit, so I think that's, you know, going towards that line rather than just super artificial will go a long way, I think, in a seltzer.
And Steve, you had an experience on a river with some Scarlet Letter recently.
Yeah, I did. So we went to a local liquor store looking for some beer for me, and we happened to run across the Scarlet Letter, and I picked some out for my wife. She was looking for something lighter to drink than you know, just regular wine. And of course, I picked out the one that was your least favorite. And she took a drink and she went, "I don't like this," but now I notice that it's almost all gone. So I think she liked it fine, but it was the one with the coriander. And I remember that it had the key lime, and I thought, well, you'll like the key lime, but the coriander kind of took her by surprise, and she wasn't quite sure, but it's really good. And I completely agree with James. It doesn't have any kind of fake taste. That's really important to me. I just can't handle it.
Yeah, I think something with, like, when you get to home brewing too, you know, like Roddy was saying, you filter it. But once you get your base down, I mean, we obviously, with the amount we make, can't use, you know, we'd be making thousands of pounds of fruit or whatever. But, like, you know, when you're doing 5 or 10 gallons, like, buy a bunch of frozen fruit or whatever. I mean, things that you like, cut up some fruit. There's so many things that, like, it's such a clean blank slate that really the sky's the limit with how crazy you want to get. So I would just say, you know, be creative, go outside of the box. If it doesn't work out, brew another 5 gallon batch, because it's not as expensive to make as beer either. I just say get crazy and, you know, try some new stuff and have fun with it.
Yeah. I was gonna say that I've had a few customers that have approached me and have attempted to make seltzer, and I don't know how successful they've been, frankly, but the hardest thing that that they've come back to me and said, this stuff won't ferment. I can't get it to ferment. And so it took a while to figure out how to help them get a good fermentation going. Because, you know, straight sugar, I mean, it doesn't want to ferment.
Yeah.
So that was a learning curve. Even for me, it didn't even dawn on me at first. It's, oh, well, just, you know, throw some good yeast in there. It'll be all right. No, it won't. You really have to think about how to do that.
Yeah, it's even harder to ferment than mead.
Yeah.
Because honey at least has some kind of you know, nutrient in there, and you can boost it with other products. But I use dextrose, and there's just nothing in there, you know, that the yeast wants. So I started off with yeast nutrient, which I guess is DAP, and got a little ways, but then came back and added some of that yeast energizer product, which also has other stuff in it. And that was able to get the yeast to do what it needed to do. And then I added some, you sell that natural flavoring. I put some mango flavoring in there, not to the extent that to make it like a urinal cake, but but it was okay. You know, I thought it was okay. It wasn't as good as the Scarlet Letters, but I thought it was okay. I have an idea. I've got this 3-pound can of blackberry puree. And my idea, I've been putting puree into the serving vessel, into the kegs, like I did a New England IPA with some pineapple puree, and I did a Belgian-inspired brown ale with some dark sweet cherry puree, you know, to give a lot of fresh fruit flavor. And I was thinking maybe, you know, maybe doing like a hard seltzer and actually putting, you know, unfermented fruit puree into the keg. Have y'all played with anything like that?
No, but that's interesting that you were saying that, because I was just going to suggest, you know, like Jamie was like, oh, go wild. Like, you know, yeah, if you have a base, like, why not just try to ferment or add a little bit of, like, fruit juice or something during fermentation or something, see if that catches on. I don't know. I mean, there's sky's the limit, but, yeah, I would definitely play with. That's how we, you know, whenever we want to do small batch kegs with flavorings, like we did a batch of this barley wine with Blanton's barrel-aged maple syrup. We literally just took the keg apart, got that syrup hot enough to where we could just like dump it in there, and then we kegged it right on top of it and served it. So that always goes a long way, and you don't have to use as much when you do it that way.
It's a little scary putting unfermented sugar into into a beer, especially if it's not filtered or, you know, pasteurized in any way. But, you know, as long as you keep it cold, you should be fine.
Yeah.
So we've got a barrel product in front of us. What have you got, Jamie?
This is the first barrel-aged beer that Roddy and I ever did. We did a double mash and like an 18-hour boil. It was a really, really long day and a lot of hard work. I want to say we got 27 or 28 Play-Doh on that thing. And we aged it in Maker's Mark barrels and Four Roses barrels for a year, and just couldn't be happier. I think we were both, you know, for our first attempt at barrel aging something, like we were just both really excited about how well it turned out. And then, like I was telling you guys, we sent it off to Craft Beer and Brewing to their panel, and they gave us a 93 on it. So, like, you know, for something our first shot at it, we were that's definitely been kind of like the crowning achievement of my brewing career thus far, was you know, Roddy and I making this beer.
Yeah, it's amazing. Now, when you say a double mash, do you mean like two batches of wort put together in the, or did you redo a reiterated mash?
Yeah, we mashed in like normal and did all first runnings, and then we ran all that into the boil kettle and then mashed in again. And while the first batch was boiling for hours, you know, we went through the whole mashing process and moved everything over there. So no sparge. It was just all, you know, just all the first runnings, and it was just super viscous. And like, you know, we got some nice caramelization from the extended boiling period. And, you know, we were here till, I don't know, like 11 or 12 at night. We're not leaving until we hit this gravity, and we just every hour, you know, just kept checking it until we were there. And like I said, had a crazy fermentation. I mean, it erupted in the brew house the next day because we obviously knew we had to put a lot of yeast in it, and came back in the next night to clean up the mess that was discovered, and then put them in the barrels, and this is what we got a year later.
It's delicious. It says it's 14%, but it doesn't taste like 14% at all. You can taste, you know, the Maker's Mark. You can taste the whiskey products without it being boozy. And I think that's a trick to do.
I think it's phenomenal. And, yeah, the it's not hot at all. So I just think it's phenomenal. I've only brewed a couple of beers this big, and they're good, but this is better. And I can taste the bourbon barrels. I taste vanilla and caramel and chocolate. A little bit of little bit of leather. It's a phenomenal beer.
So what are the keys to to taking such a big beer and brewing it so cleanly? I mean, how do you not get like rocket fuel out of this?
So that's funny. Like the unbarrel aged version of it, I feel like was very hot. That's why we were nervous whenever we put it in the barrels. We're like, well, we're getting a lot of like phenolic. Like you could tell it was going to be a big beer. We actually had it on tap for a while we were waiting on this. And it just evolved crazily. The original beer itself was really hot. That's why we were nervous. When we tried it, even the first samples, we were like, wow, like this tamed so much. And that's kind of one of the biggest things that I took from, having friends that are brewing big beers like this. They're always just like, you're gonna have to brew a beer that's almost undrinkable, put it in the barrel, and then let the barrel do the work. Because if you brew a beer that's way too thin or that tastes good, I don't think it's going to taste any better if you throw it in a barrel. So it's weird. For the barley wine, the grain bill was a lot of Vienna. Maris Otter. This was actually... So we've got another batch. We've got actually three batches. I've done a riff off of this original batch that we had. And we've got two different batches up there. And those have different Maris Otter Vienna combinations. So I've just taken this base recipe and just like played with it. So we'll see those later this year. But this one was predominantly Vienna and Maris Otter. And for the hops, we just used German Magnum.
So what's the IBU ratio on this?
I want to say 49 IBU, yeah. So it was a little, like I was saying, like the base beer itself, whenever we had it on tap, it was a little disjointed. It was a little bitter, a little hot. So that tamed out really well in the barrel, but yeah, I wouldn't drink the... Do we still have it on tap? Ropes?
Not the regular.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the regular one was interesting. I was not happy with it. That's why whenever we tasted the barrels, we were just like, whoa, this was really good. Yeah, I was nervous, because it's not cheap. We got those barrels. We're working with a closer barrel supplier now. The one that we were working with for these barrels was in Colorado, so... Getting shipped barrels from the Colorado area is super expensive, so I was very nervous because getting these barrels is not cheap. And then we'll talk about it later when we try the barrel aged stout. But I was kind of nervous like we might have had to dump these barrels, but thankfully we didn't.
So and I take it that you have to how do you have to tend the barrels over time? How do you have to look after them?
We really. Just kind of like was a set it and forget it. We had them up in the brew house for a long time, but we didn't want to disturb them. And we've made a place down here in the pub, which is cellar 2. Like we have a whole back wall now. That's where all our barrels are. And we fill them and move them down here and just leave them. We just try not to mess with them. And I think there's something too, when you start looking at other guys that are doing barrel programs, it's kind of close to a garage door. So it gets some of those temperature fluctuations and the cold and the heat, the expansion and contraction of the wood and the liquid itself. So I think all of that just plays a role in what happened. I mean, I wish that there was like some thing we can look back at and be like, this is why it turned out this way. But we were just so pleasantly surprised with how it turned out. We're just really stoked for this beer. And I don't really have a great golden answer for anybody. I mean, we obviously did everything sanitation wise and everything that you're supposed to do and try to do everything by the book, but it's really just letting the barrels do the work.
And I'm curious how you guys prep the barrels to begin with.
So when we get the barrels, that's a question we always get. From what I've been told, we get them a week after they've been dumped, so by the time we get them, there's still bourbon in them. Like case in point with these Maker's Mark, we had them, you could still smell them. Like whenever we pulled the bungs off, you could see liquid in them. So there's some bourbon in there, but that's kind of like the gamble that you take. Like when we talk about the barrel aged stout that we did, we lost three barrels. I believe one was definitely infected. Two were on the cusp, but it's the same thing. It's just kind of a gamble at this point. I know other people do, they'll do a sulfur or they'll rinse them. The only barrel that we did treat was that Four Roses barrel, because we got that from Guess Who. It was one of their store picks that they had done. So they had the barrel just sitting wherever they had it, and then they gave it to us. and, you know, the beer was made just for that barrel, but I wanted to get more barrels just in case. So for that one, Jamie and I, you know, we sealed, or we, like, soaked the head of the barrel, and then we flipped it after a couple of days, soaked the other end of the barrel just to swell it up to minimize the amount of product that would leak through, and that's really it. That's the barrel that I thought would get infected, you know. It was an 11-year-old Four Roses recipe that was in there, so it was an older barrel. If anything, we were just like, man, this is the one that's going to be infected. But that one, I feel, was the one that tied the entire thing together, because every barrel that we tasted did not taste the same. Every barrel had something to offer. One was more tannin forward, one wasn't as, one was super dry, one barrel was, you know, I feel like every barrel that we tasted, like, if we would have, because we had the idea of doing just like a single barrel series, I feel like it would have missed. Like, yeah, when we blended all of them together, we were like, wow, like, this is really cohesive. This works. Like, we're going to blend them all. So
that's one advantage that y'all have over a homebrewer or a homebrew club. You know, they get, you know, a bunch of people together to each brew 5 or 10 gallons of beer, like we did with that Russian Imperial Stout project.
Yeah.
But then you've only got one barrel, and if it's not the best, then that's what you got.
Right. Yeah, we were definitely, you know, fortunate. And, you know, Jesse, the owner's always supportive of, we're always like, yo, we need more barrels, we need more barrels. And, you know, we started with these 4 for this beer, and I think we've got pushing 20 now and more on the way. We've already got another stout that's in a tank just waiting for barrels to get here. And, you know, we want to be putting something in barrels, you know, quarterly, if we can get to that point, to where we can really get to where you're starting to get into like the winemaking aspect of it, and then we can start selecting barrels to go rather than just having one beer, and then we can start blending stouts and barley wines together and really get, you know, crazy. I mean, that's our ultimate goal, but it's just getting that back stock up. And, you know, like we said, you got to make Scarlet Letter in the meantime so we can afford to buy the toys that we want to play with.
Well, if you need a sensory panel when you're blending, you know, just to get some feedback.
The next one will be ready in October, and I believe it's a barley wine. We've got them in Willett barrels, Elijah Craig barrels, and I think, what was the other one? Was it Four Roses again?
I don't remember. We've got quite a few barrels over there now, and it's hard to remember what's in what.
Let's take a quick break to bring some breaking news from our friends and sponsors, Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa. I noticed on social media the other day that they posted a pic of new 5-barrel Blickman fermenters that they're installing for their Pippin's Tap Room that adjoins High Gravity there in Tulsa. And I asked Desiree if they're upgrading their brewing system to feed those big old things, and Desiree said that they're moving up to a 3.5-barrel system, and they're sticking with electric. Of course, HighGravityBrew.com have been pioneers of electric brewing, and they're honing their skills with their own professional gear. And that means when you order a Werthog electric system from HighGravityBrew.com, you get the benefit from their knowledge and experience. And when you use the code EBC75BB on HighGravityBrew.com, you can save $75 off a Werthog system of your own, from 5 gallons to 2 barrels, and maybe more. High Gravity has the electric brewing setup that is just right for you. To check out what you can buy using the discount code EBC75BB, go to basicbrewing.com and click on the Basic Brewing Code Deals ad on the right-hand side of the page. Take the pain out of propane with EBC75BB and save $75 off your Werthog system at family-owned and operated HighGravityBrew.com. That's HighGravityBrew.com.
Well, let's have a palate cleanser, shall we, before we move on to the... Can you open this this Scarlet Letter? This one is...
This is our seasonal offering. We do this for the summer. This is the Scarlet Letter Blue. And last year, I think we only did 1,500 cases of it. We just did a quick run, and they all sold out within 2 days. So, So this year it's obviously, we decided to up it up, you know, so more people get to try it. But, you know, with these, it's the same base recipe as all the other ones, and we're just able to really be nimble and, you know, do seasonal offerings and, you know, just kind of one-offs. And that also just drives the hype, and, you know, you got to get it while you can, and then, or you'll wait till next year. So
this one's very We haven't talked about what's on in it, but it's very floral. This one is. The others that I had were more fruity.
Yeah.
This one is more floral.
I think it's the blueberry and the peach really pop through, and you see some of that. It's almost got like a white wine hue to it because that's from the tamarind that's in it, so it gives you a little bit of earthiness to it. So, yeah, that's where that kind of comes from, and I believe, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say it almost hit me as being a little bit savory, and I think that's a tamarind.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good. It's not a it's not a kid drink.
No.
Yeah, I like it, actually.
Yeah, that's the thing that I liked about the others was that it's a more mature flavor combination. It's not just, like I said, like fruit punch or mango or, you know, just one. And Steve made a mention of the one that I liked the least.
Yeah.
I still liked it, but it was the one with the coriander in it, and to my palate it came across as cilantro.
Well, coriander
for some reason
is cilantro, basically. I could see that, and it's weird too, like talking to people, like even the red one, it's got cucumber, hibiscus, and like everyone seems to pick out a little. There's always that one flavor of the four or five that's in it that people pick out more than others, and it's just like, you know, I think it's like beer and things are subjective, and you're just gonna notice some things better than others. So you know, that's what's cool too, is like all the flavors work together, but there's definitely the ones that shine, and I would say this blue one is definitely the most aromatic. Mm-hmm. Like I can smell it from over here, you know, when you guys open the can, it's definitely more aromatic than the others.
It's tasty. It's one to look out for, and it's fun that you can get different flavor combinations and do a seasonal thing.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, it's interesting, and that's one of the things that when we first started Scarlet Letter, I was like always drawn to was the combinations. I remember whenever they were brainstorming the red, you know, their ultimate goal was to make something as refreshing as, you know, whenever you go to the 5-star hotels, they always have that like fancy cucumber water for you. And it was kind of like that vibe that they were going for. And whenever we first made the pilot batches, we're like, yeah, this is it. Like, we nailed it. So it's interesting. It's a really interesting take on these seltzers. Because the most recent one that I've had that I actually really enjoyed was the Arizona Tea Seltzer. But they don't even make it here. I think they make it in Europe. Because when I was reading the can, it was all fruit juices. And that's what I really liked about it. Like, the grapefruit one, even though it's just simple grapefruit, it tasted like you were drinking a Paloma. So it was really good. It's interesting to see where everybody's going, but I can tell more folks are using like that natural fruit juice or fruit purees or whatever to set themselves apart from, you know, that description that you had of White Claw, like chalky, almost like just weird taste.
Again, urinal cake. So are we ready for the second barrel?
Yeah, did you guys clear out your glasses?
I did.
All right, well, let me pour it up. So this is batch two of our barrel aged series. This one's only 13%, so it's practically good for you. But yeah, this is our first barrel aged stout that we did. We definitely leaned, which you guys will tell, we wanted to get away from the roastiness, and this was way more like chocolate forward. We used a lot of like Carafa 2 and 3.
All the Carafas that we used for this batch were all dehusked Carafa. Yeah, it was our first time playing. Jamie's always been drawn to blending different types of chocolate malts, and this is one of the first ones that we got to do that with. But we also got a blend of a 32 Plato stout in here to give it more body, and you guys will be able to kind of pick it up, I hope.
Cheers, by the way.
Cheers.
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 I'm fake drinking.
Here we're. It's so good to be out and about again.
No kidding.
To be. Everybody get your shots.
Yeah, no joke.
I can't believe that's a controversial thing to say, but everybody get your shots.
Nobody wants the 5G.
Yeah. I've found that since I got my vaccination, I never lost my car keys since. They're always just stuck right there on my arm.
I don't get lost.
Just call up Bill Gates, you know where you are.
Siri? Yes, my arm starts talking to me. I don't know what the hell's going on.
Yeah, after we all got vaccinated, it seems like our Wi-Fi at the plant has been a lot better, too.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Oh, this is a completely different beer.
Yeah, for sure.
So what, talk about the barrels.
This one we did, I think it was just the Jack.
No, this one was, we dumped the Jack Daniel's barrels. So it was a blend of MGP barrels, which by our distributor of barrels or whatever you want to call them, broker of barrels, they weren't allowed to disclose what was in them, but they just said it's a variety of Whistle Pig, High West, and those types of spirits that were in them. Mostly Whistle Pig, but again, they could never like specify what it was. But yeah, it was a bummer because we wanted to blend the Jack Daniels. I had high hopes for Jack Daniels because a lot of the earlier barrel-aged beers that I would have were Jack Daniels barrels. But when we tasted them, there was two that were too much on the dark fruit, almost like a Belgian. But that instantly in my head just is like, you know, a recipe for disaster. You know, maybe later, like, you know, whether it was an infected or not, develop some flavors that we didn't want. And for this one, we wanted to be just strictly as chocolatey as we could. But I feel like we did what we could with what we had, basically, because this is just a super small batch. We were only able to use 3 barrels for the whole blend because we ended up dumping those other 3 Jack Daniels barrels. They were not what we were looking for. We thought about saving them and blending them with the barley wine that we had. But even then, I had a hunch that it might just put us over on the edge to where you're basically, you know, I don't know. We could call it like a Belgian quad or something. It was that close and far off from what we would actually, from what the original recipe tasted like.
I'm getting a lot of dark, sort of bitter chocolate, but there's also like tobacco. You said leather with the earlier one. I think it could be talked into leather with this one as well. But this is a more, the first one was sort of, was sweet-ish. It's not like sticky sweet, but there is a sweetness to the first. I'm not getting it. There's a more bitter side of things with this one that I think turns it in another direction. It's delicious.
Yeah. No.
What he said.
But he said, no. It's just full of all kinds of dark chocolate. It's got that it's like eating a big piece of dark, bitter chocolate.
Mm-hmm. It's like Baker's chocolate.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's just what it reminds me of. But it also has at the very front, it seems like it takes you through some different levels of chocolatiness. So I get some lighter, almost like milk chocolate at the beginning. Now that doesn't mean it's a milk stout. I just mean that there's some lighter chocolate notes that, boy, it finishes with that really grown-up kind of, you know, little kids wouldn't like this kind of chocolate. Yeah. And then, yeah, it's got some heavier tobacco, some heavier, just, it's just a heavy flavor, but it's really good. And again, I don't get a lot of heat. I don't get any alcohol heat off
right,
of it.
Right.
That, which is what, it's kind of blown me away about both the beers. Actually.
Yeah. I mean, is that the feedback that y'all are getting?
Yeah. Like you said, they're two totally different beers. I think one person recently on Untappd, like this, the barley wine said it was basically liquid Werther's Originals, which I thought that was a pretty good description of it. And this one, like I said, we were just really intentional with the grains we use. Like, we wanted to focus on that dark chocolate. And that's the thing too, when I drink it, like you said, it evolves in your mouth, and like as you sit there and just kind of let it go, like it just continues to turn into that just darker, more like, yeah, like that high-end chocolate or whatever. Yeah. But that's like a very good description of, yeah, like not a kid would want. This is something like an after-dinner chocolate, you know, that you enjoy, and that's a very good description.
Yeah.
Yeah, the first one is probably more approachable, you know, from a flavor perspective, just because it's just like, oh, that's so delicious. This one is just like, oh, it's really good. But, you know, the more it makes you want to sip more because it's just there. It's very complex. It makes you want to smoke a cigar and, you know, put on a nice, you know, big sweater by the fireside or something.
And read a leather-bound book.
Yeah, exactly. Don't listen to Tony Bennett records.
Happy birthday, Tony Bennett. He's going to be 95 here soon.
Yeah.
First time Tony Bennett heard I Left My Heart in San Francisco was in my hometown of Hot Springs, Arkansas. Okay. Now, I always have to say that. Yeah. Steve is tired of me talking about Tony Bennett and the Vapors. Yeah, which is the club that he was at. Okay, I've had a couple of sips of big beers. This is delicious. They're both really, really good. And I would be hard-pressed to say which one that I liked, because I like both of them for different reasons.
Yeah, me too. I think I could drink more of the barley wine. I think it's more crushable, although crushing either of these will put you in the hospital. But I'm surprised how much I like. I don't typically really care for giant, big dark beers like this. I'm more of a Pilsner guy. Yeah. But I really like these beers a lot, and I could definitely drink that barley wine all day. And this one I could drink a lot of too, but I'm afraid I'd pay for it.
We always, well, not we, I would say, I kind of take things to the extreme with these, and whenever we release them, I'll just go home and drink one bottle like every night until, you know, just we get the flavor that we want. And, you know, by Friday when we're packaging these, I want nothing to do with barley wine. I want nothing to do with stout. But it's just kind of like, I don't know, something we've always done is just go back and taste them, or have like a blind tasting with friends of ours, have beers around the area that, you know, are similar to these, and see where our lines up. Because at the end of the day, we want to release something that's comparable to what's already out there, or even better. So for us to like try to put out something that's subpar, because there's really good breweries out there doing really good things. So it's just like, for us, like, we want to make sure we can compete up there before we release something like this out.
And you're releasing them in, what are these, 12-ounce bottles. Yeah. And thank you for doing that.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because I can't tell you how many times I've gotten giant beers in bombers at the house, and they wound up not getting consumed for a long time because, you know, I'm the primary beer drinker at the house, and unless we're having people over or company or something, I'm not going to want to, you know, open up a beer that I'm going to drink half of, and then the rest of it's going to, you know, be oxidized. So I think it's smart to do that.
Let's take a quick break to talk about delicious summer tartness coming from our friends and sponsors, Ricky and Kelly from Groenfell and Havoc Meaderies. Rumble, the first in the Sour Mead series, was released a year ago, and to celebrate, they're doing a limited release. If you go to Groenfell.com, you can find Rumble, which is brewed with honey from Champlain Valley apiaries in Vermont, along with pure blueberry and blackberry juice, and a sour blend of yeast strains. Yum! And that's not all for sour mead fans. There's the Sour Mead Case, which includes 8 cans of Meaderitaville, a pineapple, orange, and lime mead, Sour Mead Maker, which is a raspberry, lime, Ricky mead, and Psychopomp, a cherry mead. That just sounds like a lot of summer deliciousness. Check it all out at family-owned and operated Groenfell.com. That's Groenfell.
But you've also got, so we've talked about both ends of the spectrum. We've talked about these, you know, 84 calorie, 4.3%, 8 grams of carbs, Scarlet Letter on one side, and then these giant, delicious, luxurious beers on the other. But what are these other cans that we've got in front of us here, Jamie?
So this is our line of 25th State. It's our RTDs, our ready to drink cocktails. We do have a distiller's license, so we're able to make and release full-blown spirited drinks here, and send them out to market. This is the Hotspur. It's our gin and tonic deal, and it's all of ours are made with a local company, Pink House Alchemy's tonics, and this is made with their lavender tonic, and it's lavender, honeysuckle, and I believe it's got some lime in it as well. And see what you think. This is my favorite one of the three, personally.
And these are not spirits that you're making yourselves, right?
No, we're not making those on site.
So it's time for a sip.
Yeah, we're making the drinks here, but yeah, we're not distilling the spirits on site yet.
Yeah. It's good.
Mm.
Yeah, the drinks are made.
It smells
here.
Good.
The drinks are blended, made by Jamie Conway, but he is not distilling the spirit.
But you could, and maybe you will.
We do have the capability to do so, but just with time restraints and Rodrigo and I are the only ones making any liquid here. And like this Scarlet Letter alone, I think in June we did almost 900 barrels, not even counting beer. So finding time to distill and all that is probably not very doable right now. So so we're kind of getting that sourced out.
So what do you think, Steve?
It's a good gin and tonic. Yeah. I mean, I'd take that to the beach or, yeah, heck yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good gin and tonic.
That'll cure your malaria.
Well, it'll make it happy.
Which is where gin and tonic, did you know that that's where gin and tonic came from? They made tonic water with quinine to treat malaria, and people said, ooh, this tastes awful. Let's put some gin in it.
Right.
And so, therefore, you have gin and tonic. I'm full of useless crap.
So. Yeah, I did not know that. Yep.
Maybe it's a label idea with a mosquito.
Maybe the next 25th state will be a malaria-inspired flavor.
Let's hope not.
That's interesting. I didn't know that they would do, you know, gin and tonics like that. Like,
yep.
You knew that.
What's that?
Oh, yeah.
So
you don't want to know what they did for dysentery.
That just involved a cork.
The dysentery blend.
So what have we got for number two?
So this is the Johnson County. This is our vodka based spirit, and it's got obviously peaches. It's got the Pink House Alchemy's peach tonic, chamomile, and lemon.
You got one.
And this also, all three of these are all 10%, so they will get you there quick.
And we're just getting very small samples here.
Very small samples.
Oh, that's fun. Now, that's a delicious but less mature flavor than the gin and tonic.
Kind of like peach lemonade. Yeah.
I like that.
Hmm. I better not drink a lot of that. That's really good.
Yeah, that's really good. I don't know what to say about it. It's just really nice and refreshing. And, you know, again, you know, throw these on some ice and take them to the beach or to a barbecue. And
yeah,
they're delicious.
Yeah. Yeah, I will say, like, serving them in a glass over ice definitely changes the drink itself rather than just straight out of the can like this.
Now, the last one is got rum in it, right?
It's rum. It's the Shipwreck. It's got mango, key lime, coconut, and nutmeg. We are definitely going for that Caribbean jerk flavor. So, and this has got Pink House Alchemy's, I believe they call it the Rum Runner syrup, or tonic, that's in this one. That's where the pink color is coming from.
It doesn't smell a whole lot of rummy. Oh, okay. I could drink that. I was expecting... With rum and coconut, and you know, I was expecting more of a rummy kind of character, but this is nice. Whoa, who was that?
It must be the lawnmower crew out
there. Okay, so what do you think, Steve?
I didn't think I was going to like it, but I do. I can really smell the nutmeg in the nose, you know, and. Surprisingly, I'm kind of surprised I like it, to be honest. I like it quite a bit.
Yeah.
And again, like Jamie said a minute ago, I think, you know, over ice would I'd like it better. Mm-hmm. And good job. I mean, these are really tasty.
Yeah.
Well, that's fun that you get to, you know, even in Northwest Arkansas, you know, the beer side of things is a crowded market, and it's. And you guys do an excellent job on the beers, but it's hard to dominate, you know, in on the beer side of things. And but you have kind of pivoted, and you have done some really fun and interesting and successful things that are delicious and well crafted. So you're still using your talents as brewers, but kind of in a different way, in a way that frees you up to do more stuff that maybe some other brewers can't do.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's been, you know, like Jamie was saying, like, we're fortunate to have both of those licenses to make beer and spirits like this, or I guess cocktails now. But yeah, it's been fun. It's been interesting. Definitely as a brewer, you know, we get into the business to brew beer, make beer and all that. But there has to come a time where you just have to realize, you know, what's making money and what's being able to, you know, to keep payroll going. And, you know, being able to pivot and be able to embrace these things has been hard for both of us. But now when we look at it, it's definitely been bittersweet. Like, yeah, it's a little bit tougher to make these little cocktails. But at the end of the day, you know, if we can help the company be successful, they'll help us, you know, make some really good, crazy beers that we can keep putting out for you guys.
Well, it's something to be proud of. And if I didn't like what I was tasting, I wouldn't be here. Yeah. You know, the thing that got me here was getting that mixed 12-pack at the Whole Foods and saying, hey, wait, okay, we need to talk about this, you know. So if I didn't like it, I wouldn't be here.
Yeah. And again, yeah, I think, you know, Scarlet Letters become a juggernaut for us. I mean, we all just, it is what it is. We realize, you know, what it's doing for the company. I mean, even through COVID, we've had one month after the other of like career or company best months through some of the most challenging times in anyone's lifetimes. Like, we've, you know, hired more people and expanded through this whole thing. And like, it's something that it's got great shelf stability. We can send to we're in Colorado, Kansas, Oklahoma, like a lot of other states, and we're continued to expand. And you know, when it was first brought to our attention, Roddy and I were like, oh, man, a seltzer. But, you know, here we are a year later, and it's like, let's make some seltzer. We're making, in our opinion, the best seltzer. You know, we'll put our seltzer up against anyone any day of the week. And it's just been great for the company, and it's crazy to see the ride it's taken us on. It's allowing us to do what we want to do. We're having fun brewing and making the beers that we want to make, because at the end of the day, Roddy and I are selfish. We want to make the beer that we want to drink. So we got in a good routine where we were dropping small batch can releases almost every 2 weeks. And, you know, summer's our busiest time for seltzer, so it's been all hands on deck on that. But as that kind of winds down and we get back into our groove, we'll continue to do the small batch stuff that we want to do and release new fun beers and just keep going forward.
Awesome. Well, excellent. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah, thank you, James, for coming.
Thanks again to Roddy, Jamie, and of course Steve. Look for their barrel aged beers, and look for the Scarlet Letter hard seltzers around the area, and also their, I think it's the 25th state ready to drink cocktails as well. Roddy and Jamie hinted that we might be invited up to Core for their next barrel blending session. A little tasting, you know, that they figure out what barrels to keep and use and blend. And I hope that happens. That would be a lot of fun to have the peek and a sip into behind the scenes into what happens with that process. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to James at basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. It's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. In the meantime, stay well and stay tuned. So long.